Station number 12913.
Mr. Bellows, real 9.
With a 10-year-old boy. I stopped and I said, what have you buggers been up to? Because that was the way we spoke in those days. Not the way they speak now. I mean, it was mild. We didn't use language that you hear on television soldiers supposed to use. Marvellous, really. They said, well, look what we got. I said, well, what are you going to do with it? They said, we're going to take it back to our... When we go back, we're going to take it back to the ship. I said, you're not going to get away with that. I said, in any case, I said, we just had a signal. I said, you've got to return to your ship. They were really annoyed. And I said, I'm sorry, but you can't take that back with you. They just took what they could carry. One of them took a 12-bore, and one of them, they each took a small item, because they had to go back with their own kit, their wireless, and an IRA officer who was the who spotted for them and gave the orders for the guns to fire. When they found they couldn't take the gear, they just turned round to the old lady and, by gestures, gave her the lot. You should have seen the difference from wailing and crying when she realised that it was all hers. She was laughing and glatzy and took the donkey and a little boy and they went down the road. They must have been the richest they'd ever been in their lives. But there was a sequel to it, because in one of the landings on Italy, they went in to do the same operation again, and it was reported to us that as they landed, they received a direct hit and all three of them was wiped out, including the officer. So that loot wouldn't have done them any good. In any case, now to get back to the River Tano. There was a lovely bridge across there, and on one side was all shrub, and it was dried up except for just a trickle in the middle, and it looked more like a beach than a riverbed. Now, my signal sergeant, as he was then, ordered me to lay a line across with a party of men. I said, yeah, I can run it, just lay it over the bridge, I said, because I said, we've taken it, it'll be okay. I said, we can run it straight up. I said, be easy. He was a Channel Islander, and I'm afraid I didn't get on very well with him for various reasons. And I don't think he liked me. Well, I know he did. And he said, I wanted to go over there, he said, and lay it. That was through all this shrub, about 50 or 60 yards the other side of the bridge. I said, but all that could be mined. He said, I couldn't care less. I said, if anything happens to any of my men, I said, and I'll get away. I told him what I'd do. But anyway, I laid the line through. When I came back, some of the Sicilians, had started to filter back as they thought it was safe. Two of them were on horses, and they went the other side of the bridge, where it was like a beach. And luckily enough, none of our men had been across there. And as they went across, terrific boom, one of them had trod on a mine. One of them was killed outright. The other one was still on his horse. The horse was just more staggering. Turned the horse round, came back shouting and screaming in Italian or Sicilian, whatever they speak. And he thought that we'd fired on him. And they run out with a stretcher by the side of a horse. When we looked at him, one of his feet was blown off and the other one was hanging off. He refused any help. And as the stretcher was there, he got off the horse and tottered on the bones of his ankles, more or less, and fell on the stretcher. Never seen anything like it. Of course, they whipped him away, and the horse was by the side of the farm, and it was like a bit of a field. And the horse was going round, staggering round. It was blind, the bottom of its jaw was blown off, and it was peppered with shrapnel all up underneath. Now, the intelligence sergeant had a Bratty automatic, and I said, "You better shoot that poor bloody horse." He went across with this Bratty, and he fired 7 rounds at its head, you know. But a Bratty is not a very effective weapon. And all it done was more or less stunned it. And the horse then started to go down on its front legs, struggle, get up, sort of shake itself, go on. I've never seen anything so pathetic in all my life. I turned to Marshall, I said, "Go and put that bloody horse out of its misery." And he was quite a good shot, Mr. Jumbo. Just that was a rifle bang, and that was that. And that was a really pathetic sight. From that position, we went on, advanced. And there as we advanced, we came across, there was no sign of any action, only that there was been a fire under the culvert in the road. Now, these culverts, the Italians used to put hay underneath it to dry, and that's where they used to store it. But laying by the side, on the side of the hill, was like 5 tar babies, British soldiers, had their helmets on, and they were absolutely black, burnt black, and they were just laid there. Didn't even know who put them there, and we couldn't stop, we carried on.
What was the explanation for it?
Well, apparently, it was obvious what they'd done. They'd gone to cover under this bridge, and someone, by accident or design, had just set fire to it, and they were just burnt black in there. Who took them out and laid them out, I don't know. You couldn't even tell what regiment they were. And it wasn't a very pleasant sight. From there, we were getting near to Mount Etna by then. And again, we had to put in a night attack on a little village. And luckily, we went through and it was deserted. Now, I was laying a line with 2 or 3 signalers. It was jet black. When all of a sudden, out of the shadows from one of the big buildings, came one bloke with a fireman's helmet on, another one with his three-cornered hat, or two-corner, whatever it was, another one with a big chain and goodness knows what on. It was the fire chief, police chief, the mayor, and they stood by as I came up, and all greeted me very politely. And in broken English, one of them begged us not to damage the city, their little town or village. Actually, we'd already gone through it. And our forward troops was the other side. And one of them had a bottle of wine, which he presented to me so that I wouldn't do any damage. So I took this and went on. Of course, it was quite a laugh with the lads. We drank his wine. And that was that. Next day we carried on, and again we had a small village to go through. There was a bit of firing, shell fire, mortar fire, and what have you. But Jerry pulled back as we came on, and as I went up through the main street, it was only like a dirt road, through the centre of this little village, there was a house, and the front had just dropped, leaving the rest untouched. Just the front of the house had fallen out. Now, coming down the road was some of the villagers to get back into their village again. Once they'd realised their chaps had gone past them, they thought it was safe, so they started to come back. There was a group of about 4, a couple of women, a couple of men. Now, as I passed this house, looked in, there was the table, cloth on it, great big Bible in the middle, and sitting facing one another was an old couple, shocked, just sitting looking, more or less looking at the Bibles, you might say. This little group coming down the road, when they saw this house, threw up their hands, started bowling in Italian, Sicilian, whatever it was, until they got to where they could see in. And when they looked in and saw the old lady and the old man, I cried, same as they did. The look of joy, it must have been their parents. And that made me realise more than anything the futility of war. I'll never forget that. Anyway, we carried on, and Jerry was pulling back fast by then. Then we came to another quite a big battle we had. I think it was called Campanelli, where we had to fight for about 3 or 4 days before Jerry finally pulled back. It was about 3 or 4 ridges, hills, with valleys in between, so that each one had to be really fought for. I only know what happened with my men, my battalion. I mean, the Devons and Dorsets were also with us and took part in all these actions. And there was actions they took part in that we didn't. They were in advance when we were in reserve. Anyway, we eventually got through. There was one incident where we had an OP forward, and there was a corporal there with a sergeant, Corporal Buckner. He was a battalion boxer, both regular soldiers. And some Jerry's came up behind them and captured them. And we found out afterwards that this Buckner, he thought he'd saw a chance, and he belted one of these Germans, put him down, but the other one was stood behind him and just bashed his brains in with his Schmeisser, submachine gun. The sergeant, he was captured. And that's where we got that story from. Poor old Buckner, he was killed. Anyway, once we got over Campanelli, then things got a bit easier. We were round on the slopes of Etna, and, you know, it's always smoking. Things were... looks as if they were going to get dicey again, because suddenly we had orders that we were going to go over the mountains using donkeys to carry all of our equipment. These donkeys duly turned up with natives to as their handlers, sort of thing. But luckily for us, Jerry pulled back right to the Straits of Messina, where they were evacuating. How the hell they ever let them get across, I don't know, but the majority of the Jerry got away. The Italians, it was already rumoured that they were going to give in. Well, once Jerry got out, we again regrouped as a brigade, and our old friend Monty came up to see us. And he's then, as had become the custom with him, told us to break ranks, started to give us a pep talk, congratulated us on our performance through Sicily, and then said, across there, he said, from where, he said, we can see Italy. He said, now I've had a good look at it, and I've already picked a spot, he said, where I want my caravan to go. So, he said, but there's only one snag. He said, the Germans and the Italians are there, he said. And all you've got to do is go and take it for me. Of course, there was a bit of a moan, wasn't it? He said, look, he said, wherever I go, he said, you're going. Which was a compliment. A moan again. He said, I might be going to England. Of course, that changed. Everybody gave a cheer then. Anyway, after he'd gone, we got ready and moved up towards Messina for the Navy to take us across. Well, they'd laid on for one night. They only had a few hours, maybe 48 hours to prepare. And let's be perfectly honest, I mean, the Navy weren't, landings weren't an everyday occurrence, although they had the craft. I hadn't been trained to that extent that there was what you might call 100%. Anyway, everyone was ready to go, and it was called off. Then, so we had a wait again. And while we were there, a battalion of commandos come out from England. Never been in action. And of course, they were full of bravado. A couple of them went out and got a goat, cut its throat, and with their commando noise, they were real killers. And, of course, our lads were really amused at them because they were trying to show how tough they had. They'd never seen an angry German in their lives. Anyway, they were supposed to be the assault troops. And they were going in on the landing craft assault when we did make the landing. Again, it was an independent landing. 231 Brigade with this battalion of commandos. Anyway, the order came through to embark. We went on to landing craft infantry, which is a larger version of a landing craft. It looks something like a destroyer, except that they haven't got guns on them, only Harlequins. And they carry about 400 or 500, I suppose, maybe not so many as that. Anyway, we embarked, and off we go. We're going to a place, I think it was called Pizzo, on the toe of Italy. Our job was to cut it, to cut the road, because other troops had already landed right on the toe, and our job was to cut the road to stop Jerry from retreating. Anyway, dawn came, and we're laying off the coast of Italy, and nothing happened. Each hour had come and passed, and no sign of the commandos. In the end, I was on the bridge with the CO and the skipper, because I was, by then I was a Lance Sergeant, I was in charge of the wireless and everything, and signalling. And the CO turned round to the skipper, he said, look, he said, I'm fed up with this. He said, take her in. So in we goes onto the coast. Lovely little sandy beach. And about 150 yards in, 200 yards, there was a few buildings built against a wall. And then the mountains went up from there. Well, we stopped on a beach in a blooming great heap. And the CO's looking round. No, he's bewildered, to say the least. And there we are. In the end, he turned around to me, he says, Sergeant, break wireless silence. Call up the companies. So I calls up the companies. Each company gave the same answer. Abel, still floating. Baker, still floating. So through the companies, they were still at sea. No sign of the commandos. He said, call them in. So I called the companies in, landing craft came in, disembarked, and immediately pulled off. CO gave the order, and we went, started to advance forward. No opposition. Then on our left flank, there was about 4 or 5 rounds from a small gun fired out to sea. Then from out to sea came one burst, I should think it was from a Harlequin, at the position that this gun had fired from, and silence. By this time, we are at, the companies had gone forward, and I'm with the battalion HQ at the foot of the cliff, preparing to go up. And then we watched the assault craft come in with the commandos on. They came in, came storming out of their landing craft. And they came out, you come out in three sections, because there's three seats in an assault craft, landing craft, one left, one right, one up the middle. And then they plumped, staying on the beach, waiting. Then one man stepped forward with a Bren gun, put it at an angle of 45 degrees out to sea, and fired the success signal, which was really to tell us to come in. We're watching this. And then Jerry opened up, from on the left flank. He opened up with everything. Well, we didn't stay to watch the fun, but the commandos were there. And we started going inland. And we started, everything was going all right. Now, one company on the left had a sergeant major called Sergeant Major Bowers, MM. Brilliant man. I've mentioned him before. He was with his company HQ, and they got so far up the mountain, and there was a road cut into the side of the mountain. And on one side was a drop, on the other side was a wall about 8 foot, 10 foot high. And they heard some vehicles coming along the road. So Harry Bowers, he gave the order for them to, his men, the order to take cover. Well, some climbed up and laid along the top of this, like the bank, as you might say. Others dived under a culvert in the road. Then round the bend came a small convoy of mobile guns. And as they came along, the men on the top just dropped grenades in them. There weren't many that got out. One jumped out. He fired once and was shot. Another one got out with his rifle. Sergeant Major jumps up. And this bloke again fires. This one fires and then starts running. Harry Bauer starts to chase him up the road, past all the vehicles that were knocked out. And this Jerry started to pull away. But Harry used to carry in his haversack full of Red Devils, the hand grenades that the ITIs used to use, a little red hand.